Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. I'm sorry, I mean faithful listeners. It might not be politically correct to say guys, because of course women are listening. Or are there just men and women? Or are there maybe many other genders as well? Political correctness can be confusing, so let's take a closer look.
Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
And welcome back to another episode of the Council of Trent. I'm your host, Catholic apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And today I want to talk about political correctness. What spurred this topic that I think would be helpful to talk about, especially the issue of whether Catholics should be politically correct. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? What do we do with this? How do we respond? A few things have popped up. Well, three things. Number one, I watched a documentary on Netflix. I think I've alluded to this series in previous episodes called Explained, and they're really short. Some of them are really interesting, and I like them. They're on Netflix called Explained. They're only like 10 or 12 minutes long, and some of them are really fascinating mini documentaries. I like the one on Korean pop or K-pop. It's fascinating how they build up these pop superstars in Korea. That's one I would definitely recommend. There's another good one about cryptocurrency, things like Bitcoin, Ethereum, Dogecoin, which is like Bitcoin, but it's based on a meme involving like a corgi or a dog or something. And no matter how many times people explain Bitcoin to me, I still don't get it. I mean, I basically get the idea about currencies of exchange and the blockchain and the ledgers and stuff like that. But whenever people try to explain Bitcoin to me, I think it's always a bad sign when someone starts, well, before I explain Bitcoin, you do need to know money isn't real anyways. None of this is real. That doesn't help me have more confidence in your currency or to want to invest in it or things like that. But some of them, I was very suspicious of these explained documentary videos. There was one trashing monogamy, and I'm like, this is pretty biased. I don't like this. Monogamy is a good thing. Others in different areas. And there was one on political correctness, which I thought was fairly well balanced. So there's a few things I took issue with. Then I found out later reading an article on political correctness on Vox at vox.com, V-O-X, which tends to be a more liberal news magazine site, kind of writes in a quasi-academic style, or at least, kind of like The Atlantic a little bit. And there are interesting articles on here, well-written essays. I don't necessarily agree with them. But they're pretty interesting. Then I found out that I guess Vox is behind the Explained series. So that would explain, I guess, many of the, tones and positions that are taken on this series. So I thought, oh, well, it all comes together. And the reason that connected again about political correctness were a few things that are in the news and some books that have come out to bring the topic to light. Because this was a big topic that really exploded in the early 1990s. And it still comes up frequently because you have a clash of cultures in the United States that you have people who want to be, say they want to be sensitive, they want to be politically correct, they don't want to disenfranchise minority groups who have been afflicted by others. Then you have other people who say, well, look, these are just longstanding traditions I have. They're not harmful. People are overreacting. They're being nonsensical in their reactions to these things, or they're being far, far too sensitive, or they're trying to be victims when there's no aggression or no victimization at all. And one of the incidents that made me think about this was the recent cartoon about Serena Williams. So this happened, I'm reading an article here, The Washington Post, published September 13th. This is a continuation of the controversy. It says, a racist Serena Williams cartoon went viral. Here's how to caricature her the right way. So what happened is that the Herald Sun, which is a newspaper in Australia, published a cartoon. So it's interesting, The Washington Post and others have just said a racist cartoon. Okay. I mean, that's, you might want to say it's a cartoon that many people claim to be racist, but I guess a lot of newspapers are more kind of into op-ed today than, reporting the news. Published a cartoon this week caricaturing U.S. Open women's finalists Serena Williams and Naomi Osaka, sparking a swift international backlash. So what happened is that Serena Williams just basically went unhinged in the match. She was arguing with the umpire about the match. She threw her racket, so she took a point. Then she started arguing with him even more, saying, you're never going to ref one of my matches again. And then she was disqualified. She ended up losing the match. And people were booing, not because she did anything bad. They were booing because they wanted Serena Williams to win. Like, she was like the real favorite here. And so Osaka ended up winning. And so part of it is the controversy there is that, you know, should we tolerate this kind of behavior in sports? And some people say, well, there's other male tennis players who have done this and they weren't penalized in this way. But yeah, but that doesn't give you an excuse to do the same thing and still not be penalized. So for the Herald Sun, an Australian newspaper, published a editorial cartoon about this incident. And it shows Serena Williams dressed in her tennis uniform, and she's in midair jumping over a broken racket because she broke her racket. And she kind of resembles sort of like a child throwing a tantrum, basically. You know, her mouth is agape, her eyes are closed, like she's screaming and bellowing, jumping on this racket. There's even a pacifier on the court next to her broken racket. So the cartoonist, Mark Knight, is trying to say she's acting like a spoiled child. And then over you see the ref talking to Osaka, or the caricature of Osaka, and the ref is saying, well, can you just let her win? And so people have said that, have said this cartoon is either offensive or have flat out called it racist, saying that the caricature of Williams resembles racist cartoons of African Americans that were drawn in the 1920s and 1930s, something called the Sambo style of cartooning. So showing that this particular kind of representation of African Americans tended to use things like, you know, exaggerated facial features, exaggerated lips, portraying African Americans as having almost, you know, gorilla-like or monkey-like qualities. And so they're saying that Knight was drawing on that similar imagery, and so his cartoon is racist. And then the Herald Sun came out in defense of Knight saying, no, he's not racist. You guys are just being politically correct, and that we can't draw anything exaggerated for anyone. We could do it for maybe someone who's white, but if someone's a member of a minority, if you draw an exaggerated caricature of them, then, you know, then you're just going to be automatically decried as a racist and people are just being too sensitive. So that's one thing that came into my mind about how political correctness has been in the air. The other is a great book that has just been published. It was published September 4th by Greg Lukianoff and Jonathan Haidt. And I'm a fan of both of these authors, by the way. I think they're both very good authors. The book is called The Coddling of the American Mind: How Good Intentions and Bad Ideas Are Setting Up a Generation for Failure. Jonathan Haidt is an author who's written a lot of great books. He wrote a book called The Righteous Mind. It talks about how why good people disagree passionately on things like abortion or on taxes or welfare spending. You know, why politics feels so polarized and angry lately. And Jonathan Haidt talks a lot about tribalism, that nowadays we don't just evaluate positions. We kind of just join our tribe, whatever that might be, and we just vote however our tribe votes. And so it's kind of like this warfare mentality instead of a collective search for the truth. And Greg Lukianoff has been involved for a while with FIRE. FIRE is freedom, the foundation for individual rights in academia or in education, F-I-R-E. And they've worked for a very long time to protect free speech on college campuses. Because if there's one place in America where you don't have free speech, it's going to be a university campus. I mean, it's absurd that university campuses used to be the place where you had the marketplace of ideas. This is the place to debate things. But what Haidt and Lukianoff argue in their book, The Coddling of the American Mind, is that universities are no longer the place for young people to courageously confront different ideas, that young people are kind of these emotional, insecure wrecks. You know, they're infants wearing, you know, flip-flops and Abercrombie and Fitch, and they have to be, you know, protected from these ideas. And universities exist to provide a safe space for their you know, enculturation and things like that, or, you know, whatever it might be. And so it connects because political correctness for a long time was a term within academia. And it didn't really turn into kind of a mainstream term until in the late 80s and early 90s, Alan Bloom talks about it in his 1987 book, The Closing of the American Mind, which, by the way, if you haven't read it, you need to read it. It's just as relevant today as it was, you know, 30, 31 years ago when Bloom first wrote it. In fact, in Closing of the American Mind, that's where Bloom says that a professor, no matter what, he can expect his students to adhere to relativism and not even be able to agree on some of the most basic moral facts without being able to say something like, well, that's just my opinion. I can't impose it on other people because you want to be politically correct. You don't want to offend people who disagree with you. So Bloom talked about that in Closing of the American Mind. And then later, it really entered the public parlance with a New York Times article by Richard Bernstein. This is in October of 1990. Later in 91, the Times had a follow-up article. Robert McFadden wrote this in a follow-up article. He says, what has come to be called political correctness, a term that began to gain currency at the start of the academic year last fall, has spread in recent months and has become the focus of an angry national debate, mainly on campuses, but also in the larger arenas of American life. So we've seen this recently in the past few years with the Confederate flag. Is it a symbol of racism or is it a symbol of people's heritage? You know, people will say it's racist. Others will say you're just being politically correct. Should football players kneel during the national anthem? You probably heard about Colin Kaepernick, his new deal with Nike. And a lot of people have protested Nike and won't buy their shoes because Kaepernick was one of the first people to kneel and protest during the national anthem, saying that America doesn't deserve his allegiance or his respect, essentially because of alleged racist practices by American police officers. And many people have said, well, no, if you look at the facts, that simply doesn't back up these claims. This is just a distortion put forward by different individuals and some members in the media. So those are topical ones. But you see this, especially it starts in universities. I mean, it's kind of like every bad thing kind of like starts at universities and moves into the real world, because some ideas are so dopey, they can only survive in the university, because the university now has basically become a place for extended adolescence. University used to be a place where you would go become skilled within a particular career or subject field so you could be a productive member of society. Now when people go to public universities, it's, I want to have an experience. Oh, I need to have the college experience of, you know, being in a dorm, being in a fraternity, doing all these different activities, being in these different classes that don't prepare me for anything, by the way. Another good book that I would recommend that talk about this is The Case Against Education. I think it's written by Brian Kaplan. The Case Against Education, Why the Education System is a Waste of Time and Money. The idea here is people go to college and they study things that are basically useless. I remember being there in college, especially in the liberal arts. I'm not talking like people who study to become petroleum engineers. They tend to do quite well for themselves. They're on the right track in the STEM field, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. But I was in liberal arts, and I wanted to be a history teacher. I was not ashamed of that at all. But I knew people who were in these classes, and they were taking things that in 5 years they've probably completely forgotten. I've forgotten a lot of some of these, you know, more esoteric classes that you take. So people go, they just get a BA in sociology, a BA in psychology. They take, you know, a bunch of interesting classes or women and gender studies, you know, they take the sociology of Beyonce, you know, classes like that. And then they graduate with their BA in sociology. And do you know where they are? They're your barista at Starbucks. They're the person who's filling up your drink at the melting pot. I ran into a classmate there. I said, oh, what have you been doing? I got my BA in sociology, and I'm here at the melting pot doing something. Except the difference is I remember actually in high school, we all got out of high school, and I'm still mad at my guidance counselors about this, by the way. I am still mad that they told us, you got to go to college. You got to go to college. It's the only way to be successful. This is like 2003, 2004. And we go, and one of our friends, he doesn't go. He just goes to work at a department store. And we all went to college. And guess what? 10 years later, I know some people, they have a degree, they have $60,000, $70,000 in debt, and they're working at a department store or they're working at a Starbucks. But my friend who went straight to a department store after high school, he became a general manager. He's doing quite well for himself. So not to go on too much of a digression, but political correctness, you know, it's born in colleges, universities that are designed to sustain a kind of extended adolescence where you don't really have to grow up. And so you get just nonsense things like, well, don't say history because it's not his story. It's her story, too. You know, don't say juvenile delinquents. It's not their fault if they go and break windows. It's because, you know, it's because they weren't raised well. So they're not juvenile delinquents. They're children at risk. Don't say mankind, because it's more than just about men. And, you know, we don't need to study all these dead white European males who didn't accomplish anything. Things like that. I read another article in, it was in England. I couldn't track it down. So, and it's from British newspapers/tabloids. So I can't verify it with 100% accuracy, but it sounds like something that would happen. A school that outlawed brainstorming. We can't say brainstorming because that is offensive to people who have epilepsy. So kids, we don't want you to brainstorm an idea for this next project. We want you to have thought showers instead. Just have a thought shower. Let the thoughts, the ideas drizzle down onto your brains. So it's these kinds of things you think, what is going on here? This hypersensitivity that, on the one hand, when political correctness runs amok, when it runs amok in this way, I think that as Catholics, we need to put our feet down and say, hold on a minute. What's important is not being politically correct. It's just being correct. You know, do you want to be politically correct? I just want to be correct. I just want to have the truth. And I want to be respectful of people around me. You don't necessarily have to respect everybody's ideas. Some ideas are stupid. But you should give respect to people because people are made in the image and likeness of God. So when it's political correctness that's run amok in this way, we have to take a stand and say, this is just silly and outrageous. To go back to the college example where political correctness is just bred in universities and people are all sent out. And by the way, I and other commenters think this is one main reason a lot of people are fighting for free college, which is silly because if you make college free, then degrees are basically worthless. You know, then if everybody has a degree, then degrees don't mean anything in the job market. It's just a way to waste money, basically. But the idea, I think it's not so much to equip people, it's just to get them to college where they can be indoctrinated with a lot of these silly ideas. So to go back to that where political correctness comes from the university campus, Coddling the American Mind by Haidt and Lukianoff. I haven't read it yet, but I think it looks like a good book. I'm going to get it. You might find it helpful as well. Here's the description from the book that helps show what's going on university campuses. First Amendment expert Greg Lukianoff and social psychologist Jonathan Haidt show how the new problems on campus have their origins in three terrible ideas that have become increasingly woven into American childhood and education. One, what doesn't kill you makes you weaker. Two, always trust your feelings. And three, life is a battle between good people and evil people. And that is so what I used to see on university campuses. It's not about, number one, if someone says something that's hurtful to you, anything that is just hurtful or maligns you, it is like an attack. It's violence. And now I'm told that if I quote unquote misgender someone, or if I refer to a biological man as a he and refuse to lie about that person and use the pronoun she, I have engaged in an act of violence. And that can be punished, that I just by disagreeing with this person, even if it hurts their feelings, we used to say it hurts someone's feelings. That was just a metaphor. Now people treat it as if you hurt someone's feelings, you've really caused them harm. You've really weakened them. And that's not, you know, that's not an idea or an attitude that we should promote. And Catholics get this all the time. I mean, you know, we get jokes about pedophile priests. You know, people are walking around in skimpy nun outfits on Halloween. And some Catholics do this, but we don't all just respond with giant tantrums demanding that everybody be thrown in jail or be indicted with a hate crime. Now, we can speak out and say this is offensive. It's hurtful to what we believe. Why would you do something like that? Let's have a dialogue about this. I know I mentioned this on the podcast not too long ago when I was talking about the controversy at the Met when they did that gala about Catholic art and people showed up dressed as, you know, papal hookers, basically, you know, skimpy outfits and a mitre and things like that. But these kinds of attitudes, you know, trust your feelings, facts don't matter. Or this one, life is a battle between good people and evil people. Not in life, good people on both sides of an issue can disagree. And so we should charitably dialogue with one another to get closer to the truth. That's what's problematic, and that's what leads to political correctness run amok. And the paradigmatic example of this, the biggest example of this right now, is at a school in Washington State, Evergreen State College. Do not send your kids here. Don't send your kids to Evergreen State College, or at least be prepared if they do. They're going to get a, well, they're going to get a pretty unorthodox education. Evergreen State College last year hosted an event. It was a day of absence. This is a very progressive, quote unquote, social justice minded school. And they had a day of absence. This is similar to Berkeley. Other campuses do this, where minority students leave for the day to show they've been disenfranchised or that they're victims of persecution. And so they leave for the day to show that they, you know, don't want to be involved and that don't want to be persecuted. And whatever you think of that, which I don't think is a productive way to approach trying to share with people that you're being persecuted. Enrollment at Evergreen State College has dropped because last year they did the day of absence, but they flipped it. Instead of saying minority students were going to voluntarily leave campus, they demanded that white students and white faculty leave campus that day so they could have a safe space. That is racist. That is racism with a capital R, ladies and gentlemen. But people think they're entitled to do that. So one professor, Brett Weinstein, said he wasn't going to leave. And now he is a very progressive professor. He's worked on anti-racism efforts. He's not some kind of stodgy conservative or something like that. And he was threatened. People threatened him. They surrounded him. The principal of the school was basically taken hostage. He had to be escorted to the bathroom. He was kept in his office. It was a madhouse. What happened on school? Because universities, once again, are the place where people who can stay at the emotional level of a 12-year-old can have a place to act out now. So that's why I have very little faith in American universities anymore. But what's happened now, I'm reading this article here. It's actually a blog from Jerry Coyne. He's an atheist, author of Why Evolution is True. But he links to a story about how enrollment at Everstate is now dropped 50%. Like they've had a huge reduction in students because guess what? You know, I might not want to go to a school where people are racist and might demand I leave campus because of my skin color. And to say all of the lingo to justify this of, you know, you are a cultural imperialist and this and that, this is political correctness run amok. And we have to just put our feet down and say, enough is enough. So I'm willing to have a dialogue with you, but I am not going to lie about pronouns to appease your transgender ideology. I'm not going to accept your claims that I'm racist just because of something my ancestors did or something by a structural inequality you claim exists. I'm not going to say that I'm racist just because you label me that way. Enough is enough. So on the one hand, when it comes to political correctness, I think of people of goodwill, Catholics, anyone else, we should just say, no, this is silly. We're not going to listen to these absurd rationales, or we'll listen to them. We're not just going to roll over to them. We're going to push back against them in a gracious yet assertive way. Now, on the other hand, being someone who believes in nuance, I also don't think it's good to say that whenever someone claims to be offended or that something is racist or things like that, to automatically knee-jerk reaction say, that's just political correctness. That doesn't matter. Because, for example, to go back to the Serena Williams cartoon, look it up for yourself online, the one by Mark Knight. When I look at it, I see where people are coming from. I don't think it's fair to call it a racist cartoon because I don't think he was being racist. I don't think he had a racist intention. But I could see where someone might be offended. It could be insensitive that some of the caricatures. And I went to look at other political cartoons to show how Serena Williams is portrayed. And there's different ways that you can do it. I think some people go overboard to try to not, quote unquote, be racist, and their cartoon just kind of looks weird. But she does have exaggerated lips. Her body structure seems to be inflamed a little bit to try to give. I could see where someone is looking at that, sees like the savage Sambo caricatures from the 1920s or 30s. I don't think that was the intent. It just might be an unfortunate coincidence that. But also, when you look at the same cartoon, Osaka, her competitor, is actually, I think she's Haitian, but she has darker skin and black hair, but her competitor is drawn with blonde hair. And of course, in the early 20s, these racist cartoons would show white, blonde-haired, fair-skinned women being attacked by African-Americans. And, you know, so that, I'm like, wait, that's okay. I can see where someone's coming from. I'm not going to jump full on the bandwagon that you were a racist, but in the spirit of honesty to say, well, I could see how someone might take this the wrong way. Maybe I would have tweaked this just a little bit. I think it's important when people talk about grievances, we should hear them out. Now, if it's just absurd, call it out for what it is. But in our hearts, if we see maybe there is something a little problematic with this, we should acknowledge that. We don't want to get into tribalism like Jonathan Haidt talks about. You know, oh, well, there's the politically correct people that are over the edge and, you know, us with our traditions that are sane and, you know, we're just in the camps and we got to fight each other. Let's not do that. So I think, you know, because as a Catholic, for example, people will use terms towards us that are, I would say they're not correct. I wouldn't even use the term politically correct. They're just not correct. Like when people say papists, I mean, that's an old school one, Romanists. But even when people say Roman Catholicism or Roman Catholics or Protestant apologists will say, you know, and Rome, instead of saying Catholicism or the Catholic faith, that are, that the church we belong to is not called the Roman Catholic Church. The religion I belong to is not Roman Catholicism. That's not a name the church uses for herself. The Roman or Latin rite is one of many rites within the Catholic Church. There are Roman Catholics, but there are Maronite Catholics. There are Byzantine Catholics. There are Syro-Malabar Catholics, all kinds of different rites. The Roman or Latin rite just happens to be the largest one. And the successor of St. Peter, the Pope, the most famous figure in Catholicism, happens to be the Bishop of Rome. But I would say to someone, well, you know, just to gently correct them, actually the church is just called the Catholic Church or Catholicism, not the Roman Catholic Church, not Roman Catholicism or things like that, or just referring to our faith as Rome generically, because that has the insinuation that what we believe is just cooked up by a bunch of people at the Vatican, and it's not the deposit of faith that has been handed down to the universal or Catholic Church. Other times, you know, I'll be with people, especially people of an older generation, and they use terms that are offensive to people, that the terms were popular in a time when racism was more commonly accepted. And so I think it's fair to say, well, look, I know that was a term used before, but it's just not okay to say now. You know, you can't call a person who's Asian Oriental. Don't say my friend is colored. They're African American, or even black would probably be fine. But just to say, look, I'm not trying to police your speech. I know it can be hard. But at the same time, if it's not that much of an investment and if what we're saying isn't some kind of a lie or a distortion, then I think we should accommodate people and not use words like that that were from a context that was racist or prejudiced. We can be accommodating to people without falling headlong into irrationality or just outright lies. I remember once actually when I was in Albuquerque with my wife, you know, when I lived there for a short time, and there was an organization there that helped the mentally handicapped. It had an R in the acronym. And I said, well, what is the R for? And they said, well, it used to be for retarded. It's like, oh, well, so they just do the name. They don't use the acronym anymore. And I think that's okay. Now, I think sometimes these things can go a little bit overboard. I'm not going to say somebody who's short is vertically challenged. I think that's even more offensive. Say, here's my vertically challenged friend, Bob. Mind if I reach that for you? I don't think that's helpful. Or like with airlines, they talk about how to accommodate overweight passengers or large passengers. You can't say large or overweight. You have to say person of size. Well, aren't all people of size? I mean, we all have a size. If it's really, really sensitive to them, once again, there's a difference between talking to an individual and accommodating an individual and adopting like a speech code, especially by force from a university administrative body, or even through your employer, that demands you use just, you know, weird language that doesn't really make sense or is chock full of euphemisms. It's a fine line for sure. So I think we need to use our best judgment and just follow these basic principles. And the basic principles would be treat people with dignity. All people deserve respect. Not all ideas deserve respect. Some ideas are dumb. Some ideas should be refuted, but people deserve respect. So we should try to accommodate individuals we engage with as much as we can without going into lies, such as using speech that promotes just outright lies or deceptions about them or the world, like, you know, the transgender controversy, or stuff that's just ludicrous and it's false and, you know, doesn't correctly describe reality, like saying, oh, because I'm white, I'm I'm basically racist because of what some of my ancestors, not even my ancestors, it could have been other people. My ancestors, they were Russian Jews that immigrated here long after antebellum slavery took place. So, you know, we should be correct, not politically correct. But part of being correct means being sensitive for words and other things that can be offensive to people, and a word itself that doesn't really serve that useful of a purpose anymore, that can be replaced without some kind of an awkward intrusion into the English language. So I hope that's helpful for you as a guide and something to take with us with the culture wars as they pursue. Thank you guys once again for being here with me today. Just want to let you know, I've been really thankful for all the patrons we've been receiving. This week, I'm going to be putting up more bonus content. I'm going to be talking a lot about my debate I'm going to have next week with Dan Barker, and I've got some interviews coming up with great people like Matt Frad, Timothy Gordon, Patrick Coffin. So I've got a lot of great extra content that we're going to be throwing up at the podcast website at trenthornpodcast.com. So if you'd like to be able to access that extra content, just become a subscriber at trenthornpodcast.com. Even for $5 a month, you'll get access to soon these extra interviews and extra apologetic content that I'm going to be putting up there. And of course, a rating over at Google Play, iTunes is always helpful. Oh, one last thing. Have you seen My Big Fat Greek Wedding? It's a delightful movie for sure. But even if you haven't, have you ever seen Postcards of Greece? It's a beautiful place. Santorini, those beautiful alabaster houses overlooking, you know, pristine, clear waters. If you are interested in going there, and if you are interested in following in the footsteps of St. Paul, visiting where Paul sent his letters to the Philippians, Thessalonians, Corinthians, where Paul preached in Athens, going to Ephesus, where Paul wrote his letter to the Ephesians, visiting the island of Patmos, where St. John wrote the book of Revelation, then come with me this summer. At the end of May, May 24th through June 3rd, I will be leading a small group of people with Father Hugh Barber from Catholic Answers on a pilgrimage in the footsteps of St. Paul. There's limited seating, limited space on this pilgrimage for this summer. Hope you'll check it out. It's at Greece2019.com. That's Greece2019.com. I hope you guys check it out and you continue to listen to future episodes of the Council of Trent podcast. Thank you guys. Thank you, fellow faithful listeners, guys and gals, for listening. And I hope you have a blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.